And we're holding on Kofiud Beis Amud Beis, the third line. We talked about yesterday that the psukim in Parshas Maaseh that discuss the whole issue when a woman from one shevet inherits property from her father or from both her parents, and then there's the potential problem if she marries into another shevet, then eventually the nachla is going to go to a different shevet, and so the heads of shevet Menashe came to Moshe to ask what's going to be with that, given Benos Slavchod, and Moshe answers them in Hashem's name that in fact the din is going to be that a woman in such a situation has to marry within her shevet, and that way the nachla stays within her shevet, and we talked about various angles on that yesterday. So one thing we pointed out in the course of that discussion is there are two potential cases of hasava, where, as the pasuk calls it, v'loisisev nachla, that nachla shouldn't be transferred from one shevet to another. There are two possible ways that that can happen. One is if we say that a husband yarshins his wife, and the Mishnah said that he does, and we were discussing various ways of demonstrating that in fact it is so, then if his wife passes away before him, then he's going to inherit her property, and then it's going to be in a different shevet, if he belongs to a different shevet, that is. Or the other possibility is if they have children, then those children are going to be from a different shevet, and then also it's going to be transferred to a different shevet. So we were discussing before then, those two possible ways, Hasava Sabal or Hasava Saben, which one is the Pasuk more makfir on? So the Gemara continues, Tanya Basiba Saben, the Tanya Basiba Sabal. As a matter of fact, we do have a Braisa that refers to each one of them, that says that the one Braisa that says that the Braisa, that says that the Psukim are mainly focusing on Siba Saben, on making sure that on making sure that the nachla doesn't go from one shevet to another through the children, meaning in other words, according to that braisa, we're less concerned about what happens with it going to her husband, but rather the psukim are mainly concerned with what happens when her children yarshin her. V'tanya b'siba sabal, and then we have another braisa that says that it's mainly that the psukim are mainly focusing on the siba sabal. Now the Rashbam learns actually that the two braisas are not his girsa, which is the girsa that we have in front of us in the printed Gemara, is that the two braisas aren't really going to be arguing on the actual dinim or anything. They're just going to be what the Gemara calls in a few places mashmos dershin, that they're just how do we learn the psukim, but the actual din is going to come out the same according to both of them. That in fact both of those are an issue. The question is really which one the pasuk is focusing on first. Tosfos brings a somewhat different girsa and says that it's a bit of a doichik. The fact is, if both of them are going to be saying that the psukim are referring to both, then how can the Gemara say that one of them is talking about Siva Saben and the other one about Siva Sabal? So rather, Tosfos gives a different girsa and says that one braisa would say that there are two psukim that we're going to bring a couple of psukim in that connection. So we're going to have one braisa that's going to say both of them are referring to Siva Sabal, so the nachla being transferred from one shevet to another through the husband, whereas the other one is going to say that that both of them are a factor, the son and the husband. So it comes out, according to that, there is an actual machloikis between the braisas, whether we're concerned at all about Siva Saben or whether we're strictly concerned with Siva Sabal. So, the Gemara says, Tanya b'siba saben. So the first thing is, we have a braisa as far as siba saben, that the nachla shouldn't get transferred from one shevet to another through the son. Namely, the pasuk says, so there are two psukim in that section that both are almost identical, that say that nachla shouldn't go from one shevet to another. So the pasuk says, the first one says, "V'loisisiv nachla l'vnei Yisrael mimata el mata," that nachla should not turn from among the Jewish people from one shevet to another. So that would be the first braisa says, "B'sivas habena kosa b'daber." The pasuk is mainly focusing on that it shouldn't transfer through the child. Meaning, in other words, that if this woman who inherits property, like Benos Tzlofchod, if she now goes and marries a man from another shevet, never mind the question of her husband yarshining her, there's more the question of what's going to happen when her children yarshin her, within, if they because they're going to belong to a different shevet, because they're going to belong to their father's shevet. So the Braise continues, after Omer Basilis Aben. So you're saying that the Pasuk is referring to it getting transferred through the son. Oy Eina El Basilis Abal. Maybe in fact the Pasuk is referring to the husband. No, true Omer, when the Pasuk says, two Pasukim later, Voice Sisiv Nachla, Mimata, Lamata Acher, that Nachla should not be transferred from a Shevet to a different Shevet, Ari Basilis Abal Omer, then that's referring to the transfer of Nachla through the husband. Hamani Makayim, Voice Sisiv Nachla, Vene. So therefore, the first pasuk must be referring to it being transferred through the son. So again, according to the Rashbam, the Tana of this Braisa is not saying that neither one of them applies. It's just saying which one is the pasuk referring to first, and which is referring to second. We learned yesterday the concept that Rashbam had pointed out that in general we often try to say when there's more than one lav in the same subject, rather than saying it just comes to increase the number of lavim that a person is over on by doing this thing, we would generally prefer to say that they're referring to different things. So the Tana of this Braisa holds with that concept. Therefore, he says that we don't just want to have the two psukim are telling us multiple lavim on the same thing. Rather, we should rather say that one is referring to one and one to the other, namely the children and the husband respectively. So we'll talk about soon. The Gemara is going to explain, well, why doesn't the Tana of this Braisa, what makes the Tana of this Braisa so sure that the first pasuk is referring to the child and the second one to the husband? We'll get back to that soon. Anyway, that's one Braisa. Tanya Idoch, then we have another Braisa. Again, the pasuk starts off starting from the second pasuk. The pasuk says that one is referring to it being transferred through the husband. Maybe not. Maybe it refers to being transferred through the son. But you have two psukim earlier. Since two psukim earlier, it says that Nachla should not go among the Jewish people from one Shevet to another. So that's already referring to it going through the child. So it comes out really according to both Braises. So that's the thing. According to the Rashbam's Girsa, not only is there no argument between the Braises, what we learn from each pasuk, it's really all they're doing. The one Braise is quoting the pasukim in order. First pasuk Zayin, Voices of Nachla, Mimata, Levneisom, Mimata, Elmata, and then the second one, which is pasuk Tes, Voices of Nachla, Mimata, Lamata, Nachla, Levneisom, Voices of Nachla, Mimata, Lamata, Acher. Where the use of the word acher, which the Gemara is going to point out soon, is significant. So the two braises, according to the Rashbam, are not even really arguing which one refers to the husband, which one refers to the son. It's rather strictly a difference of which one does it seem is more obvious, that therefore we would say this pasuk is clearly, obviously referring to this one, and then the other one we have to say refers to the other one, because again, both braises are taking the view, says the Rashbam, that we're not going to say that the two psukim are referring to the same thing, because we would rather say that they're referring to two different lavim. That's according to the Rashbam, and again, according to Tosfos, the Girsa is somewhat different. One braisa that starts off that the first pasuk is referring to Sibas Abal would in fact say that both of them are referring to that, whereas the other one would say that one's referring to the father and one's to the son. So in other words, there is an actual argument between them. Are we going to say that two psukim on the same subject are teaching us two different things, or are we going to say that it's just repeating the lav? The bottom line is, in both braises, it comes out that the second pasuk that says that Nachla should not turn from one shevet to a different shevet, they both agree. Apparently, they both agree that that part at least is referring to Sibas Abal. My mashma, where do we see from the words in the pasuk that, where do we see from the words of that pasuk that it's referring dafka to the husband? That again, according to the Rashbam, both Braises agree that the other pasuk is referring to the son by, of necessity, because we can't have two of them referring to the same thing, whereas according to Tosfos, this Braises is saying that both of them refer to the husband, and neither one to the son, and only the other Braises says that, that they're referring to different things. Anyway, but which is the second pasuk test, both Braises clearly agree is referring to the husband. So my mashma, where do we see that? Where do we see that from the pasuk? So the Gemara says Simon Omar Rava Bar Shila Omar Bar Shila Omar Simon Omar Rava Bar Shila says. So one way of understanding it is Masoras Hashas says that that the word Simon over here may actually be the name of an Amora. Sometimes you have unusual names of Amora. Even nowadays, of course, you have a name Simon, although it's spelled somewhat differently. So that might mean that Simon says in the name of Rav Bar Shila. Here's one answer. The other possibility is the word simon over here means, as it does throughout Shas, it means a simon, that we're going to give a simon for the next couple of things, a mnemonic. And in that case, the word omar could stand for the words of the pasuk that the Gemara is going to be bringing the proof from. First the aleph for the word ish, then the mem for the word matos, and then the resh would be for the resh of the word acher, where sometimes in these simonim you don't use the first letter, but rather one of the later letters in the word. In that case, really, it might be Imer, because you also have in between, you have the word Yidvaku. Another possibility is that the word should actually be not Imer, but rather Imam, and in that case, then, it would be stand for Ish Yidvaku Matos and Mimata. That's how Rabbi Yaakov Emden learns. So, Omar Rav Bar Shila, Omar Kra Ish, because in that second pasuk it says the word Ish. Now, the word Ish means a man, of course, but it also means a husband, as we find sometimes in Pesukim. So therefore, in other words, we see that pasuk, when the pasuk starts off, Lesisiv Nachlam Imata Lamata Acher, and it continues, Ki Ish B'Nachlas Avoysav Yidbeku Matis Ki Ish B'Nachlasa Yidbeku Matis B'Nei Yisrael, you want that every Ish should stick to his Nachla. So the word Ish there means a husband. And therefore, we can say that pasuk is referring to the husband. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Kavayu ish ksibahu. The fact is, both psukim say the word ish. The earlier pasuk, v'leisisiv nachla, livnei Yisrael, mimate al mata, also mentions, ki ish v'nachlas mate avos of yidbeku b'nei Yisrael. The two psukim are very nearly identical. There's a few words difference between them, but they both do have the word ish in them. Now the Rashbam learns that the Gemara knew full well that both psukim say ish in them. All you have to do is open up a chumash and you'll see. So rather than the question, the opinion, Rav Bar Shila, who had said that the second pasuk says ish, he would say that the other one is used for some other derasha. But the Gemara is still asking that, no, in that case, then what makes you say that dafka, one of them should be for a drosha, for some other drosha, and the other one is going to be ish, a husband, maybe say the other way around. On the other hand, Tosfos actually learns that for this and the next couple of lines of Gemara, that Tosfos says sometimes we find that the Chachamim were not bucky in Pesukim. Sometimes we find the Chachamim were not so expert in Pesukim. So they might say that the one pasuk says ish without real on the face of it, Tosfos is saying, without realizing that the other one also contains the word ish. And you have other place. They have another place in Baba Kama also, where Tosfos seems to say as much, that the Amoraim were not always so thoroughly familiar with the Pesukim. There is a good deal of discussion about that. It seems a little hard to say, especially because of Talmud Chacham. It's brought elsewhere. It's supposed to be Baki in all 24 Sfarim of Tanakh. One obvious thing is, okay, they were Baki in them. They learned them, but it doesn't mean that they remembered them. It doesn't mean they remembered them offhand all the time. There are different other possibilities that various Achronim bring up to try and find for. So one possibility is actually maybe Tosfos doesn't mean they weren't bucky, but they weren't medactic. They weren't always careful to quote the psukim verbatim. Sometimes they would quote a pasuk inexactly. So in that case over here, so the Makshin is saying that it says ish, but then the other one's saying yeah, but the fact is you have to quote the pasuk more exactly, and then you'll the other one does say ish as well. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara continues. The answer, rather, we can say is that the pasuk that we want to say refers to the husband also has the word yidbaku in it. They should stick to their respective nachlas, and the word yidbaku is like the davak beishtai. So therefore, so that would be very more. That would be much more clearly referring to the husband. But again, the Gemara asks, "Tavayu yidbaku k'sibahu." Again, both psukim do say the word yidbaku. You could say Rav Nachman Yitzchok means to say that the one of them is meant for a drosha and the other one is meant for this purpose over here to talk about Sivas Abal, but then the question would be who says which is which. And again, according to Tosfos, we would say that Rav Nachman Yitzchok maybe was not thoroughly familiar with the pasuk, or however you want to explain. Tosfos is shita exactly, and therefore that, and in fact both psukim do say yidbaku. So Ella Omar Rava. So Rava says no. Actually, what it is Omar Kro Yidbaku Matos. It's not just that it's true in both psukim. It says the word Yidbaku, but only in the second pasuk, only in pasuk test, does it say Yidbaku next to the word Matos. So how do the two Shvatim join together in the first place? Is through the husband marrying the wife. Therefore, says Rava, to fa'entfer what Rav Nachman Yitzchok is saying, of course it says Yidbaku in both psukim, but the one pasuk where it says Yidbaku just says Bnei Yisrael, that doesn't so much suggest a joining that happened through this marriage, whereas Yidbaku Matos suggests for the first time now we have two Shvatim joined together. When does that happen? When the husband and wife get married. Rav Ashi gives another answer. Omar Kromi Mata Lamata Acher. Only in the second pasuk does it use the word acher. It shouldn't go from one shevet to another shevet. Ben lav acheru. Now a son is not considered acher because the brokara davua. He's considered a leg of his father, or in this case of his mother. So therefore, so that makes it more clear that the pasuk that mentions the word acher is in fact the one that refers to the husband, and then we can talk about whether the other one refers to the son. So the bottom line is, again, according to the Rashbam, we have two brises that both agree that the two psukim are referring to the father and the son, and the only question is which one is it more poshut that we're referring to, and then the other one refers to the other one. And according to Tosfos, you have an actual argument between the brises whether the psukim are at all addressing Sivas HaBen, or whether maybe both of them are, whether maybe both of them are referring only to Sivas HaBaal. Okay. So that's that. Now, we've been talking throughout these last couple of blocks all about the fact that a husband yarshins his wife. So now we have as follows. Here's a new topic within that. You have like this. Later on in the perek, we're going to talk about when we get to the fact that a bechor inherits a double portion. We're going to talk about there's a difference between ro'i and muchzak. Muchzak is the actual property and possessions, karka and metalklin, that are in the father's possession when he passes away. The bechor gets a double portion of those. Then you have ro'i. You have things that are not yet in the father's possession, but they're going to be. They're capable of falling into his possession. So there are different examples. One example would be, for example, money that's owed to him. He doesn't have it right now, but it's going to be. The loan eventually has to be paid off. And there are different other examples of Roy, as we'll go later on in the Perek when we deal with the dinim of Yerusha Sabachor. We're going to get into more details about that. So now we're going to talk about the same. So those a Bechor doesn't get a double portion of, we learn from a Pasuk when in connection with a Bechor. So now we're going to talk about the same. Now we're going to talk about a similar distinction as far another case of Roy, by the way, which is more relevant to our sugya over here. Imagine, for example, that the father has a relative where he's in line to inherit him. So let's say, for example, you have a father. You have Yaakov right now is still alive. He has a son. He has children, Reuven, Shimon, etc. And his father Yitzchak is still alive. Now, when Yitzchak passes away, Yaakov stands to inherit his property. But right now, he hasn't inherited yet. Therefore, if Yaakov were to pass away before Yitzchak, then we wouldn't say that Reuven, as the Bechor, would get a double portion of the Nechosim that are eventually going to come from Yitzchak, because right now those are only Roy, they're only capable of coming to Yaakov, but they haven't actually reached Yaakov's possession at the time that he died. So now we're going to talk about a similar thing as far as the husband Yaushining from his wife. So the Gemara says, Omer Rabba Bohu, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Omer Rabbi Yanai, Omer Rebbe, Umotuba, so you have a four link chain. Umotuba, some want to say that the last link in the chain is not Rebbe, but rather Mishmei de Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, is in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Tosfos, by the way, interestingly, has here and in a couple of other places in Shas an interesting discussion of who Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is. Is it possible that this is none other than a son of Rabbi Akiva? We actually do find a different Gemara that refers to Rabbi Akiva having a son named Rabbi Yeshua, and we also find a Gemara where Ben Azai calls Rabbi Akiva Akireya Chazer, this bald one, so therefore conceivably Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha might be Rabbi Akiva's son. Tosfos then continues, Rabbi Akiva doesn't like that, and he points out various objections to that, among them, why should they be calling Rabbi Akiva by derogatory name like that, and also there's a Gemara in Megillah. Let's see if you analyze it chronologically, it doesn't seem to work out. So no, it just means that his father's name was Karcha. Listen, you have a person's name Karach, you can have a person's name Karcha. There is an interesting further discussion about it that says that maybe indeed Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is a son of Rabbi Akiva, like Tosfos first wants to say, but we're talking about that he was a son of Rabbi Akiva before Rabbi Akiva became the great Talmid Chacham Rabbi Akiva. So we know, of course, Rabbi Akiva was 40 when he started learning Torah. He was an Amma Aretz until then, and Rachel, Kalva Savor's daughter, married him and told him to go off and learn Torah. Now, based on the story in Ovestid of Nosson, he already had a son by that point, which means, Bepashtos, that he had previously been married and then was widowed or divorced when Rachel met up with him and married him. And the Ovestid of Nosson says, when he first went to Cheder to start learning Aleph Beis, he went together with his son. So that being the case, then, that son might be Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, and therefore they named him Karcha, because at the time his father was Sam, the Amma Aretz Akiva. They would have had no particular reason to call the son specifically by his father's name, so therefore they would nickname him Karcha, because Rabbi Akiva at that point was bald. Later on, Rabbi Akiva became the great Talmid Chacham Rabbi Akiva, but nevertheless the name Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha stuck. So it still is possible maybe to say that he is in fact Rabbi Akiva's son, but Rabbi Akiva's son from an earlier stage in his life. But again, Rabbi Natan doesn't like that whole thing, and he says just Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, his father's name was Karcha, and that's that. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, so again, we have something that where the chain goes back to Rebbe, or some say it goes back to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. How do we know that a husband does not yarshin from his wife from what's roy like he would from muchzak? So again, you have, for example, that if his wife died and then her father dies, so now she has no brothers, let's say, so she's an only child, or she only has sisters, so she would have been in line to yarshin her father. So had her father died first and she yarshined the property, no question that her husband would yarshin her. But now we're saying that since she died first, then no, her husband doesn't yarshin that property that she would have gotten from her father. How do we know that? Shenema, we have to go back to the pasuk that we quoted from Divrei Yomim that we learned yesterday. Usguv Holidus Yor. We said that Sguv, who was a member of, we said over there, was a member of Shevet Yehuda, fathered Yor. And he, Yoyer, owned 23 cities in the land of Gilad. We talked about yesterday how comes it in the first place that a member from Shevet Yehuda has territory in Shevet Menasha. Basically, the psukim describe over there that Sgur married or had as a pilegesh a daughter of Macher who's the son of Menasha, and therefore they kind of became adopted members of the Shevet. Anyway, again, we have to ask, like we did yesterday, where does Yoyer come to have property in Gilad that Sguv didn't have, that his father Sguv didn't have? So yesterday we learned actually that it was that Yoyer himself married a woman who owned this property, and then she died and he yarshined her. Now, Rebbe or Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is yarshining the pasuk differently. So rather, what it means is that that Zguv married a woman who, and Yoyer is their son. This woman, Zguv's wife, Yoyer's mother, died while those who could have bequeathed to her would be alive. Namely, in other words, so Zguv's wife, so Zguv's father-in-law was still alive when Zguv's wife died. So now Zguv's wife died, and her father, or whoever else she would have yarshin from, is still alive. Then those relatives of hers, her father, whoever passed away, the Yorsha Yor, and therefore the Nachla went straight to Yor rather than to Zguv, because the husband wouldn't inherit it, because it's Roy. Because it was only Roy when she passed away, what happens is, in other words, so this grandfather of yours, then he inherits his grandfather, because the grandfather left no sons, so these 23 cities go to his daughter, and in turn his daughter is already dead also, so therefore Yoyer gets them. In other words, when it comes to a son yarshining from his parents, we don't have this distinction of Roy and Muchsak, only when it comes to a Bechor. So now we're saying the same distinction applies to a husband and wife. That is how it comes about that Zguv couldn't inherit those properties, but therefore it went directly to Yor. So that would be a way of explaining, and from that pasuk we can learn this din. Tosfos does point out the fact is we do say when there is something muchzak, then we say the husband gets it first, because after all the husband and the wife are kibosser echad, so in that sense he does go ahead of the son. In other words, had Zguv's father-in-law died first, and Zguv's wife was still alive, then it would already be muchzak to Zguv's wife, and now when she died, then Zguv would inherit her even ahead of her son Yoyer. But now that it was a matter of muchzak, then it doesn't work like that. And Rebbe, or Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, continues, you have another pasuk where we also see the same concept, which also we quoted yesterday. Ve'alozah ben Aaron mes, the last pasuk of Sefer Yeshua, Alozah ben Aaron passed away by Yichburu v'Goymer, and they buried him in, as the pasuk had said, in the hill of his son Pinchas, which was given to him in Har Ephraim. So again, minayin l'Pinchas shalahoy lo l'Elazar, how does Pinchas come to have property that didn't belong to Elazar? Same thing. Malamed shenasa Elazar isha. This teaches us that Elazar married a woman who inherited some property in Eretz Yisrael. Umeisa b'chayev morisheha, but she died while her father or whatever other relative was still alive. Umeisu morisheha, and then later on that relative passed away. V'yosha Pinchas, and therefore the nachla goes straight to Pinchas, because again it's only roy, it's not muchzak. And therefore, Elazar wouldn't be in line to. Therefore, Elazar wouldn't be in line to inherit it. It goes straight to Pinchas. So again, the Gemara says, "My va'omer." Why do we need two pesukim? Once we have the pasuk from Yor and Zguv, why do we need a second pasuk? So v'chitema, because otherwise you're going to answer, it's not necessarily. You could say, like we learned yesterday, Yor to have a nosav itso meisav yorsa, because who says that it's Zguv's wife that owned this property in the first place, and that her son Yor yarshined it? Maybe it's Yor's wife owned this property and she died, and her husband yarshined it. Talmud Lemav, Elazar ben Aaron mes. Therefore, we have the second pasuk with Elazar and Pinchas. The Chitema, so now you might answer, as we learned yesterday, so what? Pinchas is a Kohen, and Denophileg Svecha Romim, and conceivably he could get property without it going through Elazar by receiving it as a Svecherim, which, as we talked about yesterday, there could be two possibilities in that. One where a person directly declares this field is Cherim LaKohenim, and in that case he can give it to whatever Kohen he wants, so somebody could have chosen to give it to Pinchas. Or the other possibility is it's a field that was given to Hektish before Yovel, and not bought back by the person or by his son before Yovel, and then it goes to the Kohenim of that Mishmar, and that way Pinchas could end up getting it that way. As we learned yesterday, some Mephoshim point out, the Ramban points out, that in fact the laws are passed away before the first Yovel ever happened. So therefore, we have to really say more like the first way. It means a Sdei Acherim, like we said, somebody declared a field Acherim. Whatever, you might answer that that's how Pinchas comes to have this field, nothing to do with inheritance. No, Omakra. No, because the pasuk by Pinchas says Bnoi. The pasuk says the word his son. Now we know that Pinchas is Elazar's son. Why would it need to say that? It's a nachla ru'uyaloi Yosha Bnoi. This means it's a nachla that by rights could have gone to Elazar, but instead it goes to Pinchas. Now, what does that mean? The Rashbam brings two explanations. One is the Gemara is not really being medayik from the word b'noi, but rather from the continuation of the pasuk, where it says that asher nitam loy b'har Ephraim, that it was given to him in Har Ephraim. Given to him suggests that there was an argument about whom it should belong to, and they went to Beis Din, and Beis Din decided that it should belong to him. Namely, that would be the case over here. Elazar's wife passed away, so Elazar argues, I'm her husband, I should yarshin her. And Pinchas argues, yes, but this particular property that we're talking about is only Rory. My mother didn't yet yarshin it at the time she passed away because her father is still alive. And they went, and therefore, when he passes away, it doesn't go to you, Elazar, my father, because at that point, she had already passed away. Rather, it goes directly to me. And the Beis Din Paskin in Pinchas' favor, and that would be Asher Nitan Loi that was given to him. That's one explanation, says the Rashbam. Then he brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that in fact it is from the word Bnoi, because we know that Pinchas is Elazar's son. So it means that this place would have been Roy to Elazar. Conceivably, he could have yarshin it, but instead he doesn't. Bnoi, only his son yarshins it. He does not. Namely, that Elazar would have had a certain potential connection with it, namely because it belonged to his wife. So therefore, that has nothing to do with Sdei Cherem, because then it wouldn't be Roy to Elazar. If another Yid goes and says, my field is Cherem, and therefore I'm going to now take this field of Cherem and give it to Pinchas, then Elazar has nothing to do with it. So two ways of understanding what the Gemara's diuk from the pasuk is. Either way, the point is that we see that this is a field that conceivably Elazar could have had some connection to, but because of this rule of Roy to the Mukhsak, then he doesn't, and instead it goes directly to Pinchas. So we have that as a second proof, and then the first one was from the case of Yor and Seguv, where Rabbi Shimon Karcha is learning that it went to Yor by means of his mother, Seguv's wife, rather than as we learned yesterday, Yor inheriting it from his own wife. Okay. So that ends the topic of a husband yarshining from his wife. Now, continuing with the next case in the Mishnah, again, the Mishnah had gone through, there are four different types of relatives. You have the ones that are Neuchelin and Manchilin, you have the ones where they can inherit from each other, like fathers and sons. You have ones where it's only one directional, which is the ones we're in the middle of. We said that a son to his mother, so a son yarshins his mother, but the reverse is not true, as we learned earlier how so. A husband and wife, which has been the subject of these last couple of dafim. And now the next one is uvnei ochos. The next one is the sons of a sister. So those are neuchelin v'le manchilin. They inherit. They don't bequeath. We learned in the Mishnah that Rashbam had given two possible explanations of what bnei ochos means in this connection. It can mean where you have two sisters, and it can mean where you have two sisters, and one of them has children. So when one of them passes away, let's say you have two sisters, Rachel and Leah. So Rachel passes away, then her inheritance will go to her sister Leah, and through her to Reuven. So that's one. And then the other possibility is we're talking about his mother's sister. So we're talking about one generation further back. We're talking about his own nephews. So we're saying his own nephews, they yarshin from him if Reuven passes away, for example, and he has no brothers, where then his sister, Dina, let's say, will yarshin him, so then it'll go from him to Dina's children, but not the other way around. So the Gemara says, Tana, now we learn in a Braisa on this Mishnah, Bnei Ochos V'loi Bnois Ochos, that it means that the sons of the sister yarshin him, but not the daughters of the sister. So they want to ask, "My hirchsa? What do you mean? As far as what halacha is that?" The fact is, obviously, if there, in general, throughout these dinim of nachla, when there's no boys, then the girl's yarshin. So let's say, for example, in our second scenario, Reuven is an only son, and he has a sister, Dina. And he passes away, and therefore his sister from his father's side is going to be the one to next get the nachla. And the fact is that if Dina herself only has daughters, they're going to yarshin just as much as they would have in any other case. So what do we mean? In what way are we excluding bnois achos? So Amar Rav Sheshes lekagim. So Rav Sheshes says what it means is, you're right, it doesn't mean that they're excluded entirely. It just means as far as going first. Meaning, in other words, that in this case as well, also the sons go ahead of the daughters. Meaning, in all cases of Yerusha, you're going to say that when there are sons in that particular part, in that particular branch of the tree that are going to Yarshin, then they're the ones who Yarshin, and only when there are no sons, then the girls Yarshin, like with Benoit Slavchad. So now we're saying the same thing applies when we're talking about the Yerusha of a nephew or a cousin, according to the two different explanations in the Nashbam before. So it's the same kind of thing. You always have, we shouldn't just think when the Pasuk mentions that if there's no sons, then the Yerusha goes to the daughters, and it mentions that only in connection with Yarshining from their father. You shouldn't think it's only in that case, it applies to all the relatives as well. Whenever we say that a certain relative is going to yarshin from a person, and later on in the parak we're going to have spelled out in more detail the family tree in that connection, then you always have in each branch the sons go ahead of the daughters. Which, by the way, later on in the parak, the Gemara is going to point out that there was a situation in that regard where the Tzedukim argued on that. The Tzedukim argued that there's a certain case where, where a daughter does go ahead of a son, or a son's descendants rather, and the halacha is not like that. So the Gemara continues. Tony Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, so Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchok, the Tamed Rav Huna, Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchok taught a braisa in front of Rav Huna. It's really supposed to be, actually, Rashbam says, the word is supposed to be ditoni, because this is the proof. Ditoni means namely that it was taught on a braisa. This is going to be the proof for what Rav Sheshes had just said. Rav Sheshes had explained the braisa that we quoted on the Mishnah to say it doesn't mean that the daughters of the sister don't inherit at all. It just means that if they have brothers, then their brothers go ahead first. That we learn from the following braisa that of Shmuel bar Yitzchok taught in front of Rav Huna. Namely, at the end of the parasha of Nachlas, it finishes off the Yorash. So it says that if a person has no other relatives, then you give it to his closest relative, the Yorash, and he inherits. So therefore that means, so makish Yerusha Shnia the Yerusha Rishona. By doing that, Pasuk is comparing now here at this point we're talking about Yerusha Shnia, which is in other words like a second level inheritance. Yerusha Rishona would be the son inheriting from his father, which is the primary kind of Yerusha, which is talked about at the beginning, and everything else is called Yerusha Shnia. It doesn't literally mean the second; it just means some later one. And then at the end it says v'yorash. So therefore, so the pasuk is telling us that Yerusha by more distant degree relatives is similar to the other ones. And since it says v'yorash, so it means vav moses al inyan rishon. Means that we say, in fact, that Rashbam says not just the word v'yorash. All of them are tied together with vavs. It says if he doesn't have sons, then you give it to his daughters. V'imein le'bas, then you give it to his brothers. V'imein le'achim, then you give it to his uncles, etc. So everything is tied together with vavs. So that's called Mosif al Inyan Rishon, that it's adding to something where it said first. So therefore, it's comparing Yerusha Shnia, the Yerusha Rishona. Ma Yerusha Rishona, just like with the first inheritance of the primary kind of inheritance from a father to his children, Ben Kodim Labas, and the Pasuk makes it clear there
that sons go before daughters, that if the father who passed away has sons, then they're the ones who inherit and not the daughters. Af Yerusha Shnia ben Kerem Labas, the same way when it comes to the second Yerusha, when it comes to, in other words, any other more distant degree of Yerusha, whether we're talking about brothers or whether we're talking about uncles or so on or so on and so forth, always that the sons go before the daughters at every level of it. So in other words, again, later on in the parak, the Gemara is going to explain the way it goes as you go recursively up the tree as many times as necessary. It's going to be actually one of the daffim that takes place over Yom Tov, so I guess we won't be learning it together. But in any case, the way it works is, for example, so you have his son or any of his son's descendants, then his daughter, then any of his daughter's descendants, no son or son's descendants, no daughter, no daughter's descendants. Then, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, it goes to the father of the Nifter. No father, he already passed away, then it goes to his brothers, and again, the brothers or any descendants that they left, etc. No brothers and sisters or any descendants that they left, etc. None of them, you go back one level further up the tree, and it goes to the Nifter's uncles, his father's brothers. Again, going down the tree with as necessary with each one of them or their descendants, etc. And if not, then we go up to the next level, to his grandfather's brothers, his great uncles, and so on and so forth, going all the way back up to the beginning of the Shevet, going all the way back up to Reuben ben Yaakov, for example, and then descending down from there, we might find, for example, that the closest relative is his fifth cousin twice removed, but that's how it's going to end up being. The point is, all of those more distant kind of Yerushas are called Yerusha Shnia, explains the Rashbam. So the Pasuk is telling us, in each case, always the sons go before the daughters. So when we're talking about, for example, we have to, let's say, go all the way up to Reuben, and then we have to descend down the tree to find the closest relative from the male side. So then what we're always going to do is, We're going to look first to see, is there a boy there? Is there a man there? And if so, then he yarshins, and only if he doesn't, then his sister would yarshin. So we learn that from this word v'yorash, from the fact that everything is tied together over here with vavs. That's according to the Rashbam. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation, and rather explains that Yerusha Rishona, yes, over here means the children inheriting from their father, but Yerusha Shnia in particular refers to when a grandson inherits, when a grandchild inherits from their grandfather. So therefore, in other words, the same idea for the Nifter. The Nifter didn't leave any living sons, but he left behind, his son left behind children, so those are the grandchildren of the Nifter. Then again, among those, the boys are going to get, and only if there are no boys, then it goes to the girls. So that would be a different way of learning Yerusha Rishona and Yerusha Shnia. And in fact, Tosfos points out that in the Rashbam's explanation of this, he seems to be saying that there could be a case, that there would actually be a case that if the father who passed away left sisters, then they would go ahead of his brother's children. But in fact, later on in the parak, we say whoever is earlier in Nachla, then Yotzi Yerecha Kodmin, then his descendants come first. So therefore, in fact, in a case like that, you would actually have that since we're talking about that his brothers go first, then therefore so would their children, which in fact going to be as I mentioned, you have later on in the parak on Daf Kuf Tesvav, you have a similar discussion about that between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim about where the Tzedukim claim that if you have, let's say, the guy passed away, left behind a daughter and son's daughters. So he has his son had since passed away, but his son left daughters, and then he also has a daughter. The Tzedukim claim that the daughter should get Nachla equally together with her nieces, and the Chacham explained to them that no, that's not how it goes. The nieces would get it exclusively because they're the son's daughters, and therefore, since the son would have been the one to Yarshin had he been alive, then therefore his daughters get all of it instead. Okay, in any case, the point is, Tosfos is saying we learn that from this Hekesh of Yerusha Rishona and Yerusha Shnia. Okay. The Gemara continues, new topic, also within the Dinim of Yerusha. Toni Rabba Chanina Kameid Rav Yechanan. Rabbi Bachanel taught a braisa in front of Rabbi Yochanan that at the end of the parasha of Yerusha, after it says, first we quoted the first half of the pasuk where we said that you give the nachla to his closest relative, the Yorash Oisa. Where again we're saying that from the word v'yorash means that we're tying all the Yerushas together. Then the pasuk finishes off v'hoisa l'vnei Yisrael l'chukas mishpat. So the pasuk continues that this should be for the Jewish people as a law of judgment. So now you have a different pasuk the Gemara is going to quote that half of the pasuk soon. But first the Braisa begins by quoting a different pasuk, namely in connection with the Bechor, where the Torah tells us that a Bechor gets a double portion, and the expression in the pasuk is V'hoya b'yoyim hanchilei es bonam. It will be on the day that he bequeaths his Yerusha to his children. So then the pasuk says he has to make sure to give a double portion to the Bechor. So from that word b'yoyim, b'yoyim atam mapol nachlois. That means only by day can you give out nachla, the iyata mapil, nachlas falayla, but you can't determine nachlas by night. So what does that mean? Abaya understood Rabbi Bar Chanina's braisa to be saying that in other words, that Yerusha can only take place by day, not by night. So Abaya asks, Amalei Abaya, Elamei Ata, the Shochid B'Yamama, who the Yawsi Le'Bneis, are you telling me that only a person who passes away by day, then his children will Yawshin him? Man the Shochid B'Lelia La Yawsi Le'Bnei, and if he passes away by night, his children wouldn't Yawshin him? Where do you ever find such a distinction? Dilma din nachlas kamer. So maybe he says to Rabbi Bachanina, maybe you don't mean the actual Yerusha itself, but rather the din of Yerusha. To judge cases of nachla, cases of Yerusha, is like any other dinei mamonis, and they can only be judged by day. Namely, Detanya, as we learn in another braisa, when the pasuk says at the end of the section of Nachlas, "V'hoisa l'vnei Yisrael l'chukas mishpat," the pasuk says this should be for the Jewish people as a statute of judgment. So mishpat in particular suggests a judgment like dinei mamonis. Therefore, and we learn from that. Ur kol parasha kula liyas din means the entire parasha is finishing off. The word ura, Rashbam explains, loshen ma'ura means it happens, like it's completed, it's being finished off. The parasha is being summarized as this is a matter of din. It's a matter of a din Torah, like any other dinim mominus, liyas din, and just like other dinim mominus can be judged only by day. So in other words, Rashbam says we do need both psukim because, we have the beginning of a din Torah has to be done by day, and we learn that from the B'yoyim Hanchiloi, the pasuk that Rabbi Bar Chanina had quoted. Now we're saying that with dinim mamonis, though you could finish them off at night, but now we're saying the fact is you would have thought still that maybe dividing nachla is different. Maybe dividing nachla is like, for example, partners have a partnership and they decide to break it up. It's not really considered a din Torah. For example, we learned earlier in Ar Masechta that when you're breaking up a partnership, you don't necessarily need an actual beis din. All you need is people who know how to value. All you need to do is have people who know how to evaluate the assets of the partnership and agree to the division. In fact, you could even have that the two partners themselves voluntarily decide between them who's going to get what. So you would think that nachlas is the same way. After all, as we learned previously, nachlas are often divided by gerul even. So you could think it's not considered like a din Torah, and it doesn't have to take place by day. So therefore, so note, the pasuk tells us that you do need to do it by day. But again, the Rashbam points out that B'yoyim Hanchila Es Bonav is only referring to a son yarshening from his father. Therefore, we do need we need the word Chukas Mishpat at the end of the parasha of Nachlas to tell us that everything described in that parasha, all the other various kinds of ways in which one person could inherit from another, all of them have the same din, and all of them have to be accomplished by day. So the actual Nachla itself, if a person dies, whether by day or by night, his children or whatever relative will yarshen him, but we're talking about as far as when there needs to be a decision of who's going to get what, that dafka has to be done by day, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain. Now this Oda Kola Parsha Kola Lias Din, that's how the Rashbam learns it, that it means, in other words, that it's considered a Din Torah in the sense that it has to be by day. Tosfos learns, based on the continuation of the Gemara, that no, what we mean is, Urda kol ha-parsha li'is din, we don't just mean that it has to be done by day, but we mean, in other words, that those who are present there are automatically going to become dayonim as the Gemara goes on to explain. So the chiddur of Yehuda. So therefore, so in other words, this thing that we're saying, Urda kol ha-parsha kulo li'is din, that the entire parsha is summarized as being that it's a matter of din Torah, is the chiddur of Yehuda, is like what Rav Yehuda says. The Amr of Yehuda, Shloisha Shenichnasu Levaka Sachoila. If you have three people together who come to visit the sick person and this person wants to make sure that his nachla is given out the way that he wants to. In particular, the Rashbam explains that we can be talking about over here. The Rashbam has a very long explanation over here of what the scenario is exactly. But one point is that we're talking about over here where the Shchivra wants to make a kinyan on part of his nechosim. Now later on in this parak we're going to talk about extensively all the dinim in this parak, and the next parak we're going to talk about the dinim of matnas shchiv merah when we say that a shchiv merah's gift can be revoked, and when not. One distinction is if he gives out all his nechosim versus only some of them. If he gives out all of them, then if he recovers, then none of those gifts are valid, because the whole point he gave them is because he thought he was going to pass away. But if he gives out some of them, he knows he can't take the rest of the nechosim with him after 120 anyhow. So then, in that case, then those gifts are valid, those gifts and those bequests are valid, even if he recovers. So now we're talking about that we have that he wants to give out some of his nechosim, and that way it will be irrevocable. So we need a beistin for that purpose. So rotzu koismin, if they want to just write what he says, meaning in other words to function as edim and leave it up to a different beistin to deal with actually dealing with executing the will, then fine. So they, if they want rotzu koismin, if they want, they can just write it as edim rotzu oisin din, and if they want instead, they could become the actual Beis Din that is going to decide this is how it's going to be. So in other words, the Rashbam explains in some detail over here, you have the concept called Ein Eid Nasa Dayan, that a person who functions as an aid for a particular case can't also be a Dayan for it. So what we're talking about over here is that if they came, in other words, the Rashbam says, if they actually came to give edus, that he actually called them in and said, I want to give edus in front of you, that I want to do such and such, then they would be strictly edim, and because ein ed nasa dayan, then they wouldn't have the option of being edim. And the Rashbam goes and discusses in some detail the details of that din of Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. When do we say that people who are watching something are automatically considered the Eidim and then they can't be Dayanim, versus when do we say that they're just there, when do we say they're just there as spectators? So again, we're talking about that when we're saying they have the option of being Edim or Dayanim, that would be they were called in to be Edim, and they can say, instead of us being Edim, we're going to actually choose to be Dayanim, and because after all, there are three of us, and we can say, we're going to write down what you're saying, but we're going to actually write down a psak din that this is how it is, and nobody can undo that. That's according to the Rashbam, and then Tosfos discusses some other details and points about that. Anyway, so that's when there were three of them. Shnayim, but if there are only two of them, two are not enough to constitute a Beis Din, Kosvin Vein Oisin Din, then they can only write down his Eidos, they cannot actually be the Dayonim to say this is the Psak Din, and it's irrevocable because there are only two of them. So you have that distinction between when there are two or three. So again, the Rashbam is saying, when Nifnasu Levaker, they just came to visit, and while they're there, he says, I want you to be Edim. Then if there are three of them, they can say, instead of being Edim, then we can be Dayonim because we haven't yet been Edim. But when there are only two of them, then they don't have that option. Tosfos actually disagrees and says even if they actually came there specifically to be called as Edim, so that Rashbam is learning if they were called there as Edim, then they can't switch to being Dayanim. Only if they happen to visit, then they're able to. Tosfos actually disagrees and says that no, even if they were invited there to be Edim, then still they're allowed to say, instead of being Edim, we want to be Dayanim for this purpose. And that would be fine, and they go and deal at great length with what the Rashbam, the proofs that the Rashbam is bringing from a Gemara in Makkos from other places about this whole business of Eid Nasa Dayan, and they understand it to mean only if he actually already said the Eid, not only if he actually already became and said the Eidim, and then said the Eidus, not just over here where they're potential Eidim. Anyway, so that distinction between 3 and 2, now, V'omer Rav Chista, now Rav Chista says in that connection, which is relevant to this matter of day versus night, Lo Shonu Ela B'Yoyim. All of this only applies if they visited the Shchivra by day, where there they have the option of being Dayanim. Ava B'Laila, but if they visited him at night, Afilu Shloisha Kosvin Ven Yosin Din, even if there are three of them, they can only write the Eidos. And they still need to go in front of a Beis Din where they're going to testify in front of that other Beis Din. Because my time and to have a little Edim, because they are Edim, they ain't Ed, not the Dayan. And again, once they became Edim, they cannot also become Dayanim on the same thing. And since Edus in front of Beis Din has to be done by day, then therefore, so now when they visited the Chola at night, when they visited the Shchivra at night, so they're going to have to wait until tomorrow, and only then can they give the Aegis. There are a number of points that we're showing you make why it is in the first place anyway that Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. One reason is that Rashbam gives a reason because the pasuk says V'omdu Shnei Ha'anoshim Asher Lahem Hariv Lifnei Hashem, the two men who have the argument, which the Gemara elsewhere explains actually refers to the Edim, they have to stand in front of the Dayanim. So therefore, that means that you have to have Edim in front of Dayanim, not that the Edim themselves become Dayanim. Then the Tosfos gives a different reason. It's called Edus She'iyati Yochel LaHazima. In order for Edus to be valid, it has to be possible to be able to be mazimit, as we're going to learn about Hazama and Masechta Makkos a few months from now, Be'ez Hashem. And here, where they themselves are the Edim and they themselves are the Dayanim, it would be impossible to do that. So that would be another reason. And then there are a couple of other explanations that different other Rishonim give where we get that from. One of them is we're saying over here in the Gemara in this context of Yerusha that we learn from the word b'yoyim hanchile esbonav that it has to be done by day. So that itself means, in other words, that so from that itself we can learn that if they saw it by night, then they're not able to judge that. They're not able to judge that at any other time, even the next day, because ain't a nasa dying. So the point is, therefore, so we see that there is a distinction in that regard between day and night in terms of what they can accomplish, whether they can be dayanim and decide on the spot what the shivmanah said is valid, and that's it, it's irrevocable, or whether they can only be edim and they're going to write down their edus, and the next day they're going to be interrogated by Beis Din. So here, Rav Chista is saying, only by day do they have that option, but by night they do not. So now, Abaya says to Rav Bar Chanina, you're quoting a braisa that says, "Vayoyim atamatel nachlois," that nachla can only be given out by day, not by night. And I'm wondering whether you actually mean, is there a difference when the person passed away? That no, maybe your braisa means that when it comes to deciding who gets what, has to be done by day, and it has to be, in order for them to be a Beis Din, it would have to be done by day. Amalei said, Rav Bachanina tells him, yes, that is exactly what the braisa that I quoted meant. Not that, of course, that if a person passes away by night, his children shouldn't yarshin his property, but rather that if they visit him at night, then they don't have the option of being dayanim because nachla is because the division of nachla is considered a din Torah. In other words, again, as the Rashbam had said, you shouldn't just think it's like a voluntary thing, like when partners split up a partnership, it has to be done by Beis Din, and Beis Din can only when it comes to din mamonis, can only function by day. You cannot have them do din Torah at night.